This presentation is brought to you by iAwaken.org, a not-for-profit organization. We hope you enjoy the presentation. Please observe the copyright terms to which you have agreed.
This year is based on Shmuel's by the Abbot Slavotka, the Nesivos HaChesed. We have a remarkable discovery this evening, and that is the fact that even in self-promotion, even in the promoting of one's own self-interests, there can be an enormous extent of selflessness, that there can be chesed even in selfishness. And it's that concept that we're going to endeavor to understand. Beginning firstly with a medrash on the words Va'acharei chen kovar Avrom, and thereafter Avrom buried Soro his wife. On that says the medrash Hadohu dichtiv, about that it is said Roedev tzedokho v'chesed yim tzochayim tzedokho v'chovet. One who pursues tzedokho and kindness will find life, tzedokho and honor. Reidev Tzedokah, who is this person that Mishle is referring to? A Reidev Tzedokah, a pursuer of charity. Is that Avrom? That's Avrom. Shenema v'shomru derech Hashem la'asuz Tzedokah. And he kept the way of Hashem to do Tzedokah. The Chesed, and who is the pursuer of Chesed? That's also Avrom. Shegomal Chesed l'soro. For he bestowed Chesed upon Soro. He bestowed kindness upon Soros. And that's why Avrom is referred to by Shlomo HaMelech as a Roidev Tzedokah V'Chesed, as one who pursues Tzedokah V'Chesed. Very strange. Avrom, we know, was the master of Chesed. He was the Av who was Moser Nefesh for Chesed more than any of the other others, more than anybody else that we have in our history. Avrom was the founder of Chesed, the teacher of Chesed to the whole world. And his whole life was Chesed. There were acts of enormous self-sacrifice for Chesed. What he did in last week's Sedra, on that boiling hot day, that unnaturally hot day, 3 days after his bris, when he was suffering in pain, to go out to seek people to whom to do Chesed, the extent of Avrom's Chesed was infinite. Which is the act of chesed that the Medrash picks upon as the example which acquired for Avrom his name as a Reidev Chesed, as one who pursues chesed? What is the example? What is the case? Which of the many cases of chesed of Avrom's is chosen by the Medrash as the one which qualified him for the phrase a Reidev Chesed, one who in his nature pursues kindness, pursues chesed? Says the Medrash, you know which chesed? He buried his wife. That's the one. And if he wouldn't have buried his wife, what would he have been then? Just lacking in chesed? He would have been ois mensch. He wouldn't have been a human being at all. Never mind a Jew. What human being loses a spouse and doesn't bury them? And good, okay, he went to a lot of trouble to bury her and to find the Maraz HaMachpelo and to buy the Maraz HaMachpelo. There was a lot of effort in it, fine also. But is that the example of his most ultimate chesed, of the highest form of chesed that Avrom ever committed? We find a very similar thing in last week's Sedra, where it says, Vayizkir Elikim es Avrom vayishalach es Loit. The Ribbono Shel remembered Avrom and sent Loit out of the destruction of the city of Sodom. Ma zechiru nizkar Loit. What is this that he remembered? That the Ribbono Shel remembered and that memory saved Loit. Nizkar lo ishtiko sheshosak leAvrom b'shor sheomar Avrom al soro ishtoi achrisihi hoyo yodea v'sheisik. When Avrom went to Mitzrayim and was confronted by Avimelech, and Avrom said to Avimelech about soro his wife, achrisihi, she is my sister, Loit knew it was a lie, but he didn't tell Avimelech. That's what saved him when the city was destroyed. What kind of a thing is that? Loit was also Moser Nefesh for Chesed. Loit also, in his way, sacrificed himself so many times to do right and to be good, despite the wicked environment in which he opted to live in Sodom. Avraham was also Lot was also machdis Sochim. Lot also gave his life under severe circumstances to preserve the principles of Chesed. And what is it that saves his life finally? What act more than anything else causes him to be plucked out of that carnage and saved? Vayizkir Elohim, Hashem remembers. What does Hashem remember? That when Avraham, to save his and Sarah's lives, says that she is his sister, Lot doesn't split. And if Lot would have split, Avraham would have been killed. So is that a big deal? Is that worthy of such recognition? What human being would have done anything else? What kind of a mensch would have split and got Avraham into such trouble? Why would anybody have done it? Particularly Lot, who owed Avraham so much. So here we have two cases, one said after another, where the Medrash attributes the highest order to an act of chesed, which on the surface appears to be very ordinary in both cases. Very, very ordinary. Now chesed, all acts of chesed are extraordinary. There's no such thing as ordinary chesed. The value of an act of chesed is beyond comprehension. There are many examples of that. One example is when Moshe Rabbeinu goes out to fight in Parshas Chukas, he goes out to fight Og Melech HaBoshem. Vayomer Hashem el Moshe, Hashem says to Moshe, Al tiro oisoi, don't be afraid of Og. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Mishum Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai. Rabbi Yochanan says in the name of Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai, Mitashuvosoi shaloiso tzadik, ata yodea mohoyo beliboi. From the answer that tzaddik received, you know what he was querying. If Hashem comes and says, Moshe, don't fear Og, what does that mean? That Moshe was terrified. What's Moshe terrified of Og? Moshe, with all the miracles that have supported him this far, Moshe the tzaddik, Moshe the melech, Moshe the shaliach, the messenger of the Ribbono Shel Olam, is fighting wicked Og, and Moshe's afraid? What are you afraid of, Moshe? You've crossed the Red Sea, you've won over Paro and Mitzrayim, you've brought bread and manna in the desert. You've got water and all these miracles, and you're worried about Og? Omar, what was he worried about? Shema tamoid lo ischus shel Avraham Avinu, in case the schus of Avraham will support Og at the expense of Bnei Yisrael. Og has a lot of merit behind him. Og has a lot of weight behind him. And Moshe is worried that he will not be able to overcome the weight of Og. What is the schus of Avraham? Dichtiv vayovei apolit vayogid l'Avraham ha'ivri. Because it says in the Torah that a messenger came and told Avraham that Lot was in trouble. V'omer Rabbi Yochanan zeh Og shepolat midor ha'mabul. What does apolit mean? An escapee. He escaped from the flood. This was Og. So Og was the one who came to tell Avraham that Lot was in trouble. Og lived a very long time. He lived all the way till the time of Moshe. Og was the one who came to tell Avraham that Lot was in trouble, and the result of that information was that Avraham went out to fight and saved Lot. So Og was responsible for the salvation of Lot. And that chesed, fears Avraham, might result in Og being victorious over the Bnei Yisrael. So you see the power of an act of chesed. The Bnei Yisrael, who have been brought out by God's will so miraculously from Mitzrayim, stand to fight one of their last battles against a man called Og, a Rosho. But one thing in his life he did good. He saved Lot. He came to tell Avraham. And Moshe is afraid that is so powerful, since it's an act of chesed, it's so powerful that it could overcome him, and that Og could win the war. We had a similar case, you remember, with Esav, Yaakov and Esav, where Yaakov was worried that since Esav was at home honoring his parents all the years, that Yaakov was at Shem Ve'Aver, and even though Yaakov was learning Torah at Shem Ve'Aver, nevertheless he was afraid that the schus of Avraham, of Esav's chesed to Yitzchok and to Rivka, the fact that he was able to honor his parents and to do them chesed, that schus would overwhelm his own power. But this is even more unusual in that a little bit earlier the Medrash tells us in the Yalkut that what was Oig's intention when he came to tell Avraham that Lot was in trouble? What was his kavona? Was his intention to save Lot? No, says the Medrash. The kavona also is so she yetsa Avraham v'yehoreg.
Oig had his eyes on sorrow, and he figured that if he told Avrom that Lot was in trouble, Avrom would go out to battle, as he did. And he figured that Avrom wouldn't stand a chance. And Avrom, in fact, didn't stand a chance without miraculous intervention of the Ribbono Shel Olam. And Avrom would no doubt be killed in battle, and Sarah would then be available to marry Oig. That was his intention. His intentions were wicked through and through. There was nothing good in the intention. And despite that, the act of chesed alone could have been enough to give Oig sufficient stature to be victorious over the Bnei Yisrael. That's the extent to which one act of chesed, an act of chesed produced not only by a Jew, but even by a goy, not only by a goy, but by a rosho, by a wicked non-Jew, whose intentions were not in the slightest bit sincere. There was nothing sincere about it at all. There was no desire on his part to save Lot. There was no desire on his part to help Avrom or his family. Nothing at all. He had only one desire, and that is to take Avrom's wife. But the fact is, Lot benefited. And from that act of chesed, Moshe is worried that that act of chesed is bigger than everything that stands in the schus of he himself, of Moshe, and Aaron, and Yeshua, and the Zakenim, and the entire Klal Yisrael. That's the power of one act of chesed. It's unbelievable when we contemplate what force there is in one action of chesed, in one action of kindness, what the human being can achieve through the act of kindness that he's able to that he's able to enact. And so all chesed is not able to be estimated in terms of its value. And nevertheless, the Medrash picks out two acts of chesed, one in the case of Lot, which caused his salvation, and one in the case of Avrom, which caused him to be called a Roidei Tzedokah of Chesed. And in both cases, the Medrash says these are the ones that were responsible. Out of all the acts of chesed, these were the prime ones that were responsible for this status. So we see the Medrash does weigh them up, and the Medrash chooses the acts of chesed which we, in our perception, would regard as the most irrelevant, as the most ordinary of all the actions of chesed. Which firstly is a bit of a shock to us, because it shows how far off our perceptions are from the truth. How opposite we view things to the way things really are. What we view as the biggest chesed, the Torah glosses over. What we view as the smallest chesed, the Midrash picks out and says, these are the ones, these are the important ones. Why and what is it? To understand the value of chesed and of the different chasodim, we have to analyze the origins of chesed. And that was a subject that my father spoke about in some detail last week. The origins of chesed are Olam Chesed Yibone, that the world is structured and continues to be constructed on the basis of chesed. And that's a phrase that we often quote and we often say, but we don't fully understand the significance of it. That means that the meaning of everything in the world has to be perceived in relationship to chesed. There is nothing in the world the value of which can be appreciated without without the chesed context. If we are questioning the meaning of anything, we must be able to perceive the chesed in it. If we don't perceive the chesed in an event, if we don't perceive the chesed in an action, if we don't perceive the chesed in an object, in a concept, then we don't fully understand its value. As we had a little earlier, I said it must be a good shiur this evening, and the Sultan wants to distract everybody. That's why there's so many mosquitoes. And Mr. Karen said no. He said the mosquitoes are there to keep everybody awake. It's a different perception. He sees chesed even in the mosquitoes. I saw the mosquitoes as a nuisance, and he sees the mosquitoes as an act of chesed. One has to be able to see in everything an act of chesed. It is quite remarkable, I must say, that the mosquitoes are managing to keep your attention in a way that I've never managed to do it before. So there definitely seems to be a lot in what you say, Joe. Olam chesed yibone, that the world is structured on chesed. The world is created with chesed. That was the purpose of the origin of creation, as the ladies are learning on Friday morning in the Derech Hashem. That being good means doing good. We don't have the concept of being good without doing good. A person cannot isolate himself and be good. Be good means doing good. That's what being good means. The Ribbono Shel Olam is the essence of goodness. He is goodness in the absolute form, which means that he does good. In order to do good,
there has to be a mekabel, somebody has to receive the goodness. So the Ribbono Shel'olam created the world, which is the receptacle of his goodness. Because without that, that's part of the Ribbono Shel'olam. The Ribbono Shel'olam, part of the Ribbono Shel'olam is doing good, and to do good there has to be a recipient of the good.
That's what the Olam is, that's what the world is. So the first and the most fundamental understanding of Olam Chesed Yibaneh, the world is built by Chesed. Chesed is the essence of the world. Chesed, the world is here to enable the Ribbono Shel'olam to do Chesed. That's what it's here for. And therefore we must look at everything in the world and say, what Chesed is the Ribbono Shel'olam doing with that particular object or with that particular event? Things that we do are not always chesed. We can't look at our own actions, at the actions of human beings and the consequences of human actions, and say that's chesed from the Ribbono Shel'olam. That's not necessarily so. We have the capacity within ourselves to destroy, to be negative, but anything which the Ribbono Shel'olam has created has chesed within it. My father gave the example last week of Rav Dessler's statement that the purpose for the stars are to give joy to human beings. That's really their purpose. People look and they wonder, and we're so insignificant in such a huge universe, and what are we compared to all these millions and trillions of stars, and each one is a world in itself, and what are they all there for? And we're just part of it all. No, we're not just part of it all. They're all there for us, so that the human being can go outside and look up and feel exalted and feel elevated by what he sees. That's an act of chesed too.
And so the Ribbono Shel'olam devises a world in which we are capable of experiencing and finding enormous quantities of joy and pleasure. And the Ribbono Shel'olam likes that.
The Ribbono Shel'olam likes to see us happy. The Ribbono Shel'olam likes to see us full of joy, full of simcha. The Ribbono Shel'olam likes to see us full of gladness. That's why he created us. He created us to be able to bestow upon us his chesed, his kindness. And it is our obligation to find joy and to find happiness in everything that is around us. And he also created us with an enormous capacity for joy. There is no other creature that has such a capacity for joy. What joy, what other creature is there that has a capacity for joy? The plant world, the mineral world, they have no capacity for joy. The animal world has a bit of a capacity for joy. What's the sum total of the animal world's capacity for joy? It can find happiness in food. It can find happiness in its sexual relationships. And that's about the extent of the happiness it can find. What other joy is there available to the animal? Whereas the human being has an unlimited capacity for joy. And it's that unlimited capacity which gets him into a lot of trouble, because he needs to fill that capacity. He has such an enormous capacity for joy and for pleasure that he needs to find ways of satisfying that joy and that pleasure. And he does it by finding all sorts of new experiences which he hasn't experienced before, to try and feel joyful, to try and feel happy. And he perverts all sorts of things, and he distorts all sorts of things just to try and experience a bit of pleasure and a bit of happiness. And so much is invested in the human being's pleasure and happiness and joy. If you look at the industries in the Western world that are doing the best today, and always will do, entertainment, food, those are the industries that will always do well. And the more that there is a depression, and the more there is a recession, and the less money that is available, the better those industries will always do. Because there is such a need of the human beings to feel good, that when the situation is one of depression, there's all the more reason for them to feel good, and all the more need for them to feel good. And perhaps in earlier days, where people were better educated and more able to provide themselves with pleasure through reading a good book, through studying something, to go to spending time outside in beautiful areas, to going to art galleries or listening to music, people had the ability to provide themselves with pleasure. But today people are not well educated, and they have not been taught how to provide themselves with pleasure. And they therefore become dependent on the purveyors of pleasure and joy and leisure to supply them with bottled and canned pleasure and joy. And that's why they need their televisions, and that's why they need their videos, and they need their casinos, and they need their cinemas, and they need all the things that make them feel happy, and their restaurants and all that. And they're prepared to spend a lot of money on it.
But the Ribbono Shel'olam, in giving us this capacity for joy, also gave us the means to fulfill it. Firstly, we have the direct means of experiencing joy.
We experience joy through our own lives. We see something beautiful, we encounter something beautiful, we experience something magnificent. That brings us joy. We have pleasure. We have pleasure from our children. We have pleasure from ourselves. We have pleasure from our families. That brings us joy. But there's another whole area of joy which the Rebbeinu Shalom has made available to us in the most magnificent sense. Also something absolutely unique to the human being. And that is, through the process of identification, the human being is capable of sharing joy with others. That means if I identify with somebody else, if I love somebody else, I can feel as happy as they do when they are in a state of happiness. That's the possibility of a human being. When a father or a mother sees their child happy, they experience at least as much happiness as the child. How come? That's what love means. That's what identification means. The human being has the capacity to love somebody, and through that love to identify and live through his joys with him, to share in his simchas, to share in his joys, to share in his happinesses. We're foolish. We don't do it often enough. We become narrow and we become mean and we become inward and we don't open up, we don't identify and we don't sympathize and we don't empathize because we're scared of the consequences. It means opening a little bit. And so we block off from ourselves one of the major sources of our own simcha and our own joy. Because as much joy as one human being can provide for himself, he has the capacity of multiplying that by millions if he would develop the capacity also to experience and to enjoy the nachas and the simcha and the happiness of other people too. But the Ribbono Shel Olam goes a step further. There's only one thing that a healthy person finds more joyful than receiving joy, and that is providing joy. There is only one thing that is more pleasurable than being entertained, and that is entertaining. More pleasurable than being taught is teaching. More pleasurable than being loved is loving. The Ribbono Shel Olam therefore added further to the human being's capacity for enjoyment by providing him with the ability not only to be dependent, and I can enjoy myself if something happens. If I see a beautiful sunset, I will be happy. If I am invited to somebody's chasana and I can join the simcha with them, I will be happy. If my wife says something nice to me, I will be happy, but I'm totally dependent on others. What kind of joy is that? And if a day goes by and nothing nice happens, then do I get miserable and depressed? No, says the Ribbono Shel Olam. The greatest joy of all is to supply joy, and you can do that whenever you want. Day and night, constantly. You're not dependent on anybody else for that. You can constantly be a supplier of happiness, a supplier of joy, and a supplier of pleasure. And there is nothing in the world more pleasurable than to give pleasure. So the ultimate of joy the Ribbono Shel Olam gives to us on the plate and says, I'm giving you that capacity. And this is all unique to the human being. An animal can't share joy. If an animal sees another animal enjoying a bone, if a dog sees his friend enjoying a bone, the dog doesn't sit there and say, ah, isn't it nice that he should have nachas, he should enjoy it. I'm also climbing nachas. Doesn't. He starts growling and he starts dribbling and he starts getting angry and eventually ends up with a fight. Like many human beings too, but that's because they're not human. But a human being doesn't. A human being can sit and look at somebody enjoying an ice cream and say, ah, isn't that nice? Look at him there. He's totally in it. Sometimes one gets disgusted when one sees people eating. But one doesn't only get disgusted. Human beings can have two feelings as well. As you see a person with his plate, with his face on a plate of ice cream, shoveling it in with a look of absolute ecstasy on his face. True, it makes one a little bit disgusted. But when you're over the disgust, look at joy. Look at him. He's having nachas. He's enjoying himself so much. Isn't it nice? That such a simple thing as a bowl of ice cream can provide a human being with such joy. Isn't that wonderful? Isn't that nice? You have a little bit of simcha. You also go away feeling better. You also go away feeling a little bit elevated. And so on goes. But that's unique to the human being. But not only that, but we now become capable of enjoying not only our own joy, but of sharing the joys of others. But in addition to that, we are capable of providing joy. And that an animal isn't. It's true the animal gives joy sometimes, but he doesn't know that there's anything special about it. He doesn't enjoy it. It doesn't mean anything to him. He doesn't find any pleasure in providing joy and in providing happiness. When a dog, if the master throws the ball and says, the dog, go and fetch it. The dog runs off and he fetches the ball and he brings it back to the master. And the master's beaming from ear to ear, so happy that his dog is trained well. Such a joy. Says the dog, is the dog happy enough with that? He says, good, I've provided joy to my balabos. That's enough for me. That in itself is reward. He waits for the biscuit. He waits for the reward. He's doing it, it's fine, but he expects, he also wants to be made to feel good. I made you feel good, you make me feel good. The act of entertaining, the act of providing the pleasure, that doesn't bring any fulfillment to the dog. The animal is not capable of finding pleasure in giving pleasure. Only the human being can find pleasure in giving pleasure, and can in fact find more pleasure in giving pleasure than in receiving pleasure. I don't think there is any one factor more contributive to marital breakdown than this concept, where people go into marriage each one for the purpose of receiving pleasure from the other. And that doesn't last very long. When people go into a marriage, each one with the intention of giving pleasure, when each one sees the marriage as the opportunity for continuous giving of pleasure, that means I now have a framework in which day and night I can provide satisfaction, day and night I can provide pleasure, day and night I can make somebody happy, and there is nothing in the world so joyful as making somebody happy, that's why I want to get married. Such a marriage works, it cannot but work. But how few those marriages are. Because normally we need pleasure, and we haven't developed the sophisticated skills of finding more joy in the giving of pleasure than in the receiving of pleasure. That's how far the Ribbono Shel'olam has gone in giving us chesed. That he has given us a universe capable of entertaining us, of providing us with joy and pleasure. He has given us the ability to enjoy not only our own joy, but another person's joy as well. At the Shabbaton last time, I had a very pleasurable experience with one of the people there, not from the Beis HaMedrash. Late on Saturday night, I had a telescope, and he was showing us a few of us some of the things that could be seen with a telescope, and he showed us Saturn. It wasn't a very powerful telescope, so you had to look very carefully. But if you look very carefully, you could see the rings around Saturn. It was like an absolute gem. It was a very, very thrilling experience. But what was most thrilling of all to me was the thrill he got out of my joy. He'd already gone through my happiness. He'd seen Saturn many times. And there's no question that the first time one sees Saturn through a telescope is a very special experience. It only happens once in a lifetime. Once it's happened once, you've had it. But I saw him reliving his joy by watching me enjoying it. And that was very, very special. It's possible to be done. One doesn't have to think, once one's done something, it's finished, you can have just as much joy. Sometimes one has been to a place, whether it's overseas or to a very special place, and once one's been once, one never is able to recapture that feeling of doing it again, of being there for the first time. But you can recapture it by taking a loved one there for a first time. That's also very special. One takes a wife there, one takes a husband there, one takes a child there, and one watches them going through that same experience of seeing it for the first time, and one lives through it with them and enjoys it with them. That's the capacity that the Ribbono Shel Olam has given us, to be able to relive over and over and over and over again all the joys of our life. There is no end to how many times we can extract the same and even more pleasure out of the same experience over and over again, if there's chesed in the experience. And then the Ribbono Shel Olam has given us also the capacity to give kindness, to give pleasure, to give joy, which is the greatest joy of all, and makes us independent of others, because we now no longer have to wait for people to experience joy or to receive or to provide us with joy, but we can be the providers of joy and become totally independent. But the Derech Hashem says that the Ribbono Shel Olam goes a step further. And the ultimate of joy really is something that you can do for yourself. There is no question that the joy of seeing Saturn through a telescope for the first time is very great indeed. But it's nothing compared to the joy that must have been experienced by the first person who discovered the rings around Saturn. That wasn't somebody who said, look, if you look through the telescope now, I've set it up for you, if you look now, you'll see. What you see there is Saturn. You see it? Yes, I see it. Now, look carefully. Can you see? Yes, I can see the rings. Wonderful, beautiful. That's very exciting. But can you imagine the person who, hundreds of years ago already, discovered it? Nobody said to him, that Saturn has rings. He saw it himself for the first time. No other human being had ever witnessed such a thing before. When a person is the master of his own joy, when he is the owner of his own joy, when he is the creator of his own joy, then the joy is multiplied many, many, many times. And so the Ribbono Shel Olam gives us a value system and a Yetzer Hara. And he says, I've got all this joy for you. Endless joy. More joy than you can possibly handle. And I'm creating you with an enormous capacity for joy. It doesn't help giving you all the joy and you've got no capacity for it. It doesn't help providing you with an enormous dinner. And when I invite you, straight after you've just had lunch, that there's no point in that. I've created limitless joy and I've created you with a capacity for limitless joy. But there's a bit of a condition to it. The extent of your joy depends on what you put in. The more you invest, the more you will reap. There's a quid pro quo. And that's how the Ribbono Shel Olam created the world. The more you put into it, the more joy you'll get out of it. So at least you know that whatever joy you get out of it is yours. You've earned it. I'm not going to dish anything out. I'm not going to hand anything out for nothing. Because at the end of the day, a handout is pleasurable only for the moment in which it is received, and then it loses its meaning. But something one has worked for and something one has toiled for retains its joyfulness forevermore. And so in order to make us the Baalei HaChesed, to make us masters of the Chesed which the Ribbono Shel Olam has provided us, to make us owners of our own goodness, the Ribbono Shel Olam gives us a Torah and a value system. He gives us a Yetzer Hara and he says, now live correctly, there's all the joy, there's all the pleasure. Operate correctly and you will get as much of it as you earn. If you miss it, you will not get the joy. So we see that if we're going to measure Chesed in terms of its origin, then the ultimate of Chesed is a Chesed we provide to other people which does not create indebtedness. If a Chesed creates indebtedness, then there is something lacking in the Chesed. That's what the Ribbono Shel Olam wanted to avoid, to get a handout. It's true, you can make somebody happy by going up to them and saying, I saw you sitting on the bench outside, I don't know you, you look very unhappy, so here's 10,000 rand for today. Cheer yourself up a little bit. That's one way of doing a chesed. But if he's any kind of a mensch, he's not going to be able to sleep at night after that. What have I done? Who is this man? How do I repay him? When am I going to repay him? Is it possible to repay him? And one puts him into a situation of such indebtedness that he can never really be independent, and every time he looks at you, he's going to look the other way. He isn't going to be able to face you because of a feeling of an indebtedness which it is beyond his control to repay. That's not the ultimate of chesed. As great as the chesed is quantitatively, it is qualitatively not great at all. Qualitatively, chesed is great when we do a chesed to a person in a way which leaves him feeling non-indebted. In a way which leaves him feeling as the Baal HaChesed, as the owner of the Chesed. Now there are two ways that can happen. If he's an ingracious, ungrateful individual, then whatever Chesed you do for him, he won't feel indebted. He doesn't have the capacity to feel indebted. But we're not talking about such people. We're talking about people who are always feeling indebted and don't like to feel indebted and therefore don't like to receive Chesed. And now you've got to do Chesed today, because part of being good is doing good. So how are you going to do good in a way which leaves them feeling unindebted, in a way which leaves them feeling independent, that although you've done this wonderful chesed for me, I don't have to do anything back for you. I deserve it. Just as the Ribbono Shel Olam does for us, and we will come at the end of our days and he will give us the goodness he has stored for us, we won't have to feel what we have to do for them. Thank you, Ribbono Shel Olam. We worked jolly hard for this. And we appreciate it very much. It's ours. We're entitled to it. In the human situation, there's only one way, really, that can be achieved. And that is when we do chesed to people to whom we are indebted. When we do chesed to people to whom we are not indebted, we create an indebtedness on their part. And that makes us feel good. But when we do a chesed to somebody to whom we are indebted, we do not create an indebtedness on their part at all. and that doesn't make us feel good. But that's the true chesed. That's a far higher level of chesed. And here we see the error of a secular vision of chesed. The secular vision of chesed is that the less we owe a person, and yet we do chesed for them, the greater is the kindness, the greater is the chesed. Take some stranger, you know, you say, isn't it wonderful? He met the stranger on the park bench, he doesn't know him from a bar of soap, and he gave him 10,000 rand. Just like that. Isn't that wonderful? And the secular approach is, yes, that's unbelievable. That's an act of chesed beyond all understanding. We don't look at it that way. We say, that's very nice. How does he treat his wife? How does he treat his parents? How does he treat his employer? How does he treat his employees? That's where we'll find out what kind of chesed this really is. And if we find that he doesn't treat his parents well, then we'll say, but this is odd. His parents, to whom he owes his life, he doesn't treat well. A stranger to whom he owes nothing, he gives 10,000 rand. What is this man? So what was the 10,000 rand for? For the stranger? There's some other cheshbon. There's some other calculation. He enjoys the feeling of power. To do a chesed for his parents doesn't give him any power, because he owes it. Repaying a debt only gives a certain pleasure in the sense that one's doing what one is obligated to do. But it doesn't give one the feeling of power and potency. Not at all. If you've got some money to spare, there are a few options. You can give tzedakah. Very nice. Makes one feel very good. One can invest it. Makes one feel very good. One can give it away. Also makes one feel very good. One can buy a new motor car. Also makes one feel very good. One can pay off the bond on one's house. Doesn't make one feel particularly good. So what am I left with? I had the house before and I've got the house now. With a bond, without a bond. The only thing that has helped me is good, so I don't have the worry of the bond. Don't have the worry. So in a year's time I'll take out a bond again. But it doesn't give one the same pleasure, the same sense of potency, as it does to use that money for something new, to make one feel, I have this extra money, ooh, look what I can do. So one finds another little sticker that they've got in the backs of these broken crocks of cars where people said, don't laugh, and they said, don't laugh, this one's paid for. There's a lot in those stickers. I don't know if they're true. I don't know if it's true that those are paid for necessarily. But one thing is for sure, that the big fancy ones aren't paid for. That's for sure. So what does the person do? He's living in a house on which he owes hundreds of thousands of rand. He's running a business which he operates on an overdraft. He's driving a car on which he owes a lot of money. Now he gets some extra money. What does he do with it? It doesn't enter his mind to pay off his chayvus. It doesn't enter his mind. What can I do with the money to make me feel good? Paying debts doesn't make one feel good, except in the release of that indebtedness. But it doesn't give one that same sense of achievement and potency that buying something new or even giving it away gives to a person. And so the greater the indebtedness to the recipient of the chesed, the greater is the act of chesed. A child who acts with chesed to his parents is far more ethical than the person who acts graciously to the stranger. The person who acts with thoughtfulness, with sensitivity to his wife or to her husband, is far more of a baal chesed than the one who mistreats his spouse but treats everybody else with hospitality and generosity and graciousness. The test is close to home. The test is where your obligations lie. How much of a baal chesed are you in the area where you owe it, in the area where your chesed is not creating indebtedness, where you're paying off debts, and in fact, you're not even paying off debts. Let's take the example where you owe on your house 200,000 rand. And we're not talking now where you've got 200,000 rand all of a sudden from an inheritance or something, and the question is what to do with the 200,000 rand. Then to pay off the house might give a degree of pleasure. We're talking where you've got 100 rand. That's all. What do you do with 100 rand? Do you buy something with it? Do you spend it on yourself? Do you gamble? Do you invest? Or do you start paying off your chayvus even with 100 rand? There is no pleasure at all in putting the 100 rand in to paying off one's debt, because it's nothing, it's insignificant, it doesn't reduce the monthly repayments, it has no effect. But it has to be done. They have the first rights. One's creditors have the first rights on anything that one has. But we don't feel that. We don't like to feel that. It doesn't make us good to feel that. So it is when one pays off to a parent. Is one paying off? You're not paying off. It gets swallowed up in this enormous barrel of indebtedness. a little bit more, but nothing's getting paid off. It's insignificant in the ocean of indebtedness which exists. But that's where the test of chesed is, to see how you meet your obligations, not how you meet your voluntary contributions. That's not where you find the chesed. And so Avram is called a roide chesed from what? From the chesed he did to those three people, those three angels he thought were Arabs? No, that's not what makes him a roide chesed. To all the hundreds and thousands of people that he had in his home day and night, he entertained them, he fed them, he taught them. Is that what made him a roide chesed? No. The chesed he practiced with his wife Sarah. That's what makes him a roide chesed. When you see a person putting as much chesed into the area of his obligations as into the voluntary areas, where you see him paying off his indebtednesses with as much enthusiasm as he does by creating new opportunities of investment and of gifts and of charity, then one knows that he's about chesed, that he's a roidev chesed, that this is somebody who pursues chesed even in the areas where he owes it, and there is no self-centeredness in the chesed whatever. And so with Lot. Out of all Lot's acts of Mesiras Nefesh, of self-sacrifice for chesed, kindness, which is the one that Chazal pick out as being the most extreme? Keeping quiet when he could have split on Avraham Avinu. That's an act of chesed. He has an obligation to keep quiet. He would have been a murderer had he opened his mouth. He would have been a nobody arranging for the death of the man who saved your life. What kind of human being would you be? You owe your life to Avraham Avinu. You are obligated to keep that secret. That doesn't matter. The fulfillment of that obligation is the highest form of chesed. And it doesn't mean that Lot just did it naturally. It means that Lot saw in that an opportunity to pay Avraham back just a little bit. He did it consciously. When he kept quiet, he said to himself, "The Ribbono Shel Olam has created an opportunity for me to make a choice. It would be a terrible choice if I were to decide to split on Avraham Avinu. That would be a terrible thing and I would never do it. But that's irrelevant. What's important is that I find joy in keeping quiet. I find pleasure in keeping quiet. Because here it is in my hands to kill Avraham Avinu with one word. And I am choosing not to kill Avraham Avinu. Not just because it's not a menschliche thing to do, but because of everything that I owe Avraham Avinu. This is my one opportunity to do a chesed in a way which doesn't create an obligation. All the chesed I've done in my life," says Lot, "creates an indebtedness in the other person. All the entertaining I've done, all the tzedakah I've done, all the hospitality, all the bikur chori, whatever I've done," says Lot, "in each instance it's created an indebtedness in the recipient of my chesed, and therefore the chesed hasn't been complete. This is one opportunity I have to do a kindness to Avraham Avinu which creates no indebtedness. Avraham never has to say thank you to me for keeping quiet. I owe him much more than he owes me." And that's why it's so valuable to Lot. Just as Avraham found value in being able to bury sorrow. And he buried sorrow not just as an ordinary person would bury a wife. I have to do it and there's no question and I'll do it with everything that I've got. No, this is a wonderful opportunity. For the last time, says Avraham Avinu, to do a chesed in a way which creates no indebtedness, to do a chesed to somebody that I owe so much to. No chesed I can do to my wife, says Avraham Avinu, can repay her for what she's done for me. And here's an opportunity to do chesed, which is chesed that doesn't create a concomitant indebtedness. It's pure chesed. It's chesed which remains chesed and has no counter effect upon me. And that concept we can now take one step further. We see that the closer to home that the recipient of the chesed is, the greater is the chesed. The more the obligation to do the chesed, the greater is the chesed. We now understand Hillel HaZaken's explanation of the posuk, Gomel l'nafshui ish chesed. You remember the Talmidim said to Hillel HaZaken once on his way home, "Where are you going?" And he says to be Gomel chesed to my achsanya, to my guest. And they say, "Rebbe, but every day after the Beis HaMedrash, after you leave the shul, every day you go the same way. Have you always got a guest at home?" He says, "Yes, I've always got a guest. Is the soul not a guest in my body? And I have to go and look after my neshoma. That's chesed. I'm doing chesed to my neshoma." What does that mean? It's chesed to myself. Is that called chesed? But if we take our concept of this evening to its logical conclusion, that the closer to home the recipient of the chesed, then we come to the point where we say, and where I am the recipient of my chesed, then it's the most valuable of all. But of course, if I'm the recipient of my chesed, it's not really chesed. that I am fortunate enough to be made up of two parts. I have a body and I have a soul. And my body's only purpose in life is to serve my soul. That's what it was created for. So when my body does serve my soul, does my soul become indebted to my body? Does it have to say, you should care? Thank you. Thank you for eating, for keeping me alive. Thank you for getting to shuls that I can daven. Does it have to say thank you? It doesn't have to say thank you. Thank you for putting on tefillin. My body doesn't have to say you should care for that. That's what you're created for. That's your purpose. You have no justification in life other than to serve the soul. So when the body does serve the soul, as an act of chesed, then I understand that my soul was brought into this world, doesn't like it here. This is not where it feels comfortable. It comes from other worlds. But I've got to make it feel as comfortable as I can. And I have a body which the Ribbono Shel Olam gave me for that purpose of making that soul feel comfortable, of doing for that soul what it needs to have done for it. Just like a guest. You have a guest, he's away from home. He's not comfortable. He's away from his family. He's away from the things that are familiar to him. He's away from his environment. He's away from his friends. And he comes to stay with you. It's not just food you have to provide for him. It's not just a shelter which you have to provide for him. You've got to make him feel at home. You've got to make him feel comfortable. So it is that we have to make our neshomas feel as comfortable as we can by surrounding them with a spiritual atmosphere, by enabling our neshomas to fulfill themselves as best they can in this funny place in which they find themselves. And if I see in that an act of chesed, chesed which I can do day and night, chesed which never stops, chesed to my soul, ah, you'll say, it's so close to home, that's not chesed. No. The closer to home it is, the greater the chesed. Because that act of chesed is creating no indebtedness at all. There's nobody to say thank you. There's nobody to pat me on the back. There's nobody to take a photograph of me doing the act of chesed. It's between me and myself. Nobody else even knows about it. It's the area of my highest obligation. I have an obligation to all of humanity. I have an obligation to all of the Jewish people. I have an obligation to my community. I have an obligation to my family. I have an obligation to my parents, to my wife. But the most important obligation that I have of all is to myself. And when I take care of my soul properly, that too is an act of chesed, says Hillel HaZaken. An act of chesed where the obligation is highest and where there is no indebtedness created. The soul owes the body nothing as a result of that. It's absolute free. It's absolutely free of the creation of any counter indebtedness. That in essence becomes the highest chesed of all. Goimil the nafshe ish chesed. Who is a real Baal chesed? Is the one who knows how to look after himself. So we find people who are kind to strangers but not kind to friends. We find people who are kind to friends but not kind to family. We find people who are kind to family but not kind to immediate family. And we find people that are kind to immediate family but not kind to their own souls. Their neshama wants to learn Torah, they don't allow their neshama to learn Torah. Their neshama wants to grow and wants to develop. Their neshama wants to daven with kavanah, they don't let her do that. Their neshama wants to do further mitzvahs. We restrict the neshama from doing those mitzvahs. We distract it. We involve it in all sorts of other things. Totally disregard the feelings of our neshamas which we schlep around with us all the time. It's like having a guest with you and never once asking him, what would you like to do now? Well, he's a guest with you and he's got to stay with you. You say, how long have you come to stay with me for? He says, I've come to stay for 80, 90, 100 years. So we better get used to one another, we better get used to living together, fine. No? Comes the first morning, and you sit down at the table for breakfast, and you don't say, what would you like for breakfast? So I like poached eggs for breakfast, we're having poached eggs for breakfast. Shoma keeps quiet, your guest keeps quiet. After that, you don't say, what would you like to do this morning? I'm going to work, come. We're going to work this morning. We come home, what are we going to do this evening? I feel like going to the movies this evening, or if we go to the movies. Absolutely no consideration ever once enters one's mind to say to the neshama, what would you like to do? There are many husbands like that. Not so many wives. The wives somehow are much more sensitive to their husband's needs, but many husbands like that. Never enters their mind to actually think, what would she like to do this evening? How would she like to spend the holidays? How would she like to spend the day? And if he does ask her, wives are usually so tuned in that the wife is already trying to work out what answer he wants her to give. And she gives the answer he wants her to give, unless she's being dafke. And he, the stupid idiot, takes it at face value. So he says he's dying to go and watch the cricket. There's nothing that is so boring to her in the whole world as watching the cricket. So he says, remember that Shirim was a Shabbos. Right, darling, what would you like to do this Sunday? Holding the newspaper up, looking at the cricket. And she says, you know what I would like to do? I would love to go to the cricket. Ah, wonderful, he says. That's one, let's go. Doesn't enter his mind that maybe she's doing it for him and it's really the most painful thing for her. No, she said she was doing it for cricket. Fine, that's it. I'm the Baal Chesed. So insensitive to the people we're stuck with. Somebody comes just for an hour or two, we say, what would you like to do? Is that what you would really like to do? Are you sure? Wouldn't you like to do something else instead? We're very considerate. Why not? It's only for an hour or two, then we can kick them out. But a wife we're stuck with for our whole lives, if we're going to constantly do what she wants to do, then what kind of a life is it going to be? And a neshoma is even worse. We're stuck with it, absolutely. But how often do we say to ourselves, neshoma, what would you like to be doing today? Are you really enjoying yourself? Is this taka what you enjoy? Is this the way you enjoy spending your time? When you came down from Shemayim, is this what you thought it would be like? Is this what you came for? Do you want to stay here a little longer? Are you enjoying your sojourn here? Or are you dying to get back? That we don't find the need to question at all. Because that area of chesed is just too close to home for us to feel comfortable with. But that's the area of chesed that is most vital of all. The redef, stoko, the Chazal on Redef, Tzedokah v'Chesed, that's Avraham Avinu, that's Chesed close to home. Vayizcher Elokim, that's the Chesed which the Ribbono Shel Olam remembered for Lot, was the Chesed closest to home. And Gomel l'Nafshei Ish Chesed, that a man of true Chesed, a man of constant Chesed, is a man who not only shows Chesed to his friends, to his society, and even to his family, but a man who shows chesed to his own neshama, who is sensitive also to the spiritual needs of himself.